Welcome to the Astrology University podcast, helping you find insight, inspiration, and meaning through the study of astrology. And now, on to the show.
Welcome to the Cosmic Eye, the Astrology University podcast. We will be looking at the month ahead and the challenges and opportunities that are coming. This is the podcast for the Libra season. I'm Alejo Lopez, your host, and today with me is Jason Holly. Jason needs little introduction as he often tutors at Astrology University. He's a practicing astrologer and a psychotherapist. His approach to astrology is relational and archetypical. Hi, Jason. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Great to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Now, before we move into the Libra season, I would like to mention once again, as I usually do, that if you like the podcast, the best thing you can do to support us is to share it. We would also love to hear your feedback. So if you want to share your thoughts or your reflections, my Instagram is liminalcosmos, and you can also email Astrology University at the email address is help@astrologyuniversity.com. So when I think of Libra, I usually think of this idea of balance. For some reason, this time when preparing the podcast, I was thinking of Maat, the goddess, the daughter of Ra in the Egyptian mythology. And she represents the cosmic balance and the idea of justice. So her symbol is the ostrich feather that was used to measure the weight of souls, right? So when a person died, they would measure the weight of their soul or their heart, as I heard. And if it was lighter than a feather, they wanted to see if it was lighter than the feather. And I like this idea because I like the idea of balance that Libra brings. But I also like this idea because it kind of reminds me that we're getting closer to Scorpio, which is about death and transformation and transcendence. Because in the Northern Hemisphere, right, we are changing seasons. We're going into autumn, which is the moment in which we're going to see nature start dying. So there's this kind of after the exuberance of the summer and the sun in Leo and all of this, there's a sense of, okay, now we need to balance a little bit the energy. I don't know, what images do you get when you think of Libra?
Thinking of the image you're sharing, when I think of Libra, I think so much about sort of an attenuation to the environment and sort of watching all of the vectors of force, all the vectors of different trajectories of different things, that there's kind of always a watching of all of that and an attempt to understand, you know, what are all the things affecting a situation? It's so profoundly relational. And I think also about those scales of Maat in the sense too about value, you know, that scales are often used to determine value. You know, you put the object on one side or the gold on the other, or, you know, you weigh something. And I like what you just said about the preparation for Scorpio, even just thinking about the constellation, you know, that it's the newest one of the 12, you know, and at least in the Greco-Roman, you know, they only started to see the scales for a while. And before, the scales were the claws of the scorpion. And so it does feel like it is a preparation for something and a chance to take all that exuberance of summer and sort of say, okay, what is meaningful here? What has value? What can carry on into the deeper, you know, the deeper dive? So I do relate to that one. The other person who comes to mind is Themis, who is one of the goddesses of justice in the Greek world. And I've always thought of her because on the one hand, she was the goddess of justice. She was the goddess of divine justice. So there was Thiki, who was, I think of more as the Virgo and person holding scales, but Themis, she was one who was concerned with the ideals of justice. And when I think about ideals with Libra, you know, there's always this, you know, emphasis on how does the current situation connect to the ideals behind it, kind of a Platonic orientation.
Yeah. So it's a good time to reassess that, perhaps, to think about how our life is actually being attuned to our values. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what might need to be transformed in the following season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Nice, thank you. So we usually choose a classic Libra to share. And who would you like to choose?
Well, I the one who comes to mind for me really strongly is Mohandas Gandhi, or often called Mahatma Gandhi, which means great soul. And, you know, Gandhi was both a Libra sun and also a Libra rising. So, you know, double Libra. And Whenever I think about Gandhian principles, so many of them feel like Libran principles. You know, so for instance, in his approach, right, one of the most basic things was nonviolent passive resistance. You know, so he managed to take apart the biggest empire, or you know, to free India from the biggest empire that ever was in the world, but he did it in this way that was not about fighting and active attack and that kind of thing, but was about passive resistance, non-cooperation. You know, it wasn't aggression. It was meeting aggression with nonviolence. You know, the principle of ahimsa, you know, no harm. And then many other of his ways as well. There was the Satyagraha, which, you know, graha, some people will know, is the Vedic word for planets is graha. You know, it means to grasp, and Satyagraha means to be grasped by the truth. And, you know, to have these sort of ideals that you're holding fast to is actually, I think, very Libran. It's because it's a cardinal sign, right? But the way that it accomplishes its goal, it's quite directed. And yet the way that it accomplishes it is does not often look very directed, you know?
Yes. I was thinking exactly about that when you were sharing this thing about Gandhi, that it reminds us that Libra is a cardinal sign. Because there is this kind of, in Instagram, perhaps there is this, or TikTok, there is this trend to see Libra as the indecisive sign. And I'm not sure if it's the best description for Libra, because it is a cardinal sign.
Yeah, right. And you know, when I have worked with the mythology of Libra, I often feel like they're kind of, you know, of course, we always speak in polarity, you know, Aries to Libra and so on. But within Libra, I think there's a polarity inside the sign. In that, you know, there's a mode of the sign that is about accommodation, getting along with, you know, Libra's associated with fashion, which of course is very much a matter of attuning to the moment of the times and looking at, you know, becoming the paradigm of beauty of that moment and accommodating, you know, fashion's quite accommodating of the gestalt. But then there's also the Libra that is very also very sensitive to the world around them, but then tweaks it. You know, that a lot of activists have strong Libra because they can, right? They can see the way things are arranged, and so they can accommodate, but they can also, you know, move one thing and it changes the whole. And Gandhi was like this, you know, the Salt March was one of the famous things where, you know, they marched against the British commoditizing salt. And all these moments that were just the right thing to do to galvanize the people, you know, it's seemingly a small thing and yet becomes a symbolic, you know, expression. So I agree with you. I sometimes think about it in the constellational way, you know, where there's the claw kind of Libra, you know, the scorpion that tries to change things. And then there's the balance that tries to, you know, keep the status quo. And you'll often see Librans jump back and forth, you know, right. They're very accommodating. And then suddenly, you know, under, you know, or doing it subtly, like Themis is one of my favorite figures for this, because in the Kypria, you know, one of the kind of the Homeric epic besides the Iliad and the Odyssey, there was another that we just have the fragments of. And, actually, the Trojan War, you know, which Eris, you know, started by throwing the apple into the party that she wasn't invited to, but in the keep, and then that, you know, created the envy of the goddesses, which led to the Trojan War. But actually, in the Kypria, Zeus and Themis have a conversation where Themis is the one who plants the idea in Eris's mind by saying to her, you know, oh, darling, you know, very Libra, like, oh, honey, weren't you invited to the party? You know, so Libra, you know, it's so like indirect, but she knows that what will happen is Eris will get angry knowing she wasn't invited to the party. So that's classic Libra, right? You know, like starting a fight without looking like you started.
Exactly. I didn't do anything. It was all her. I didn't do anything. Yeah.
So it's very, yeah, that ability to act is underestimated with Libra because it's very pretty and smiling and, you know, makes you feel good. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. So my classic example of Libra, this time I'm Argentinian, so I went to I went to an Argentinian singer. He's called Charlie Garcia, and he was born on the 23rd of October, so at the very end of Libra, 1951, in Buenos Aires at 11:20 a.m. I'm saying this in case somebody wants to see the chart. And this is why I chose him, because he was a musician in the period where we had the dictatorship, and he was really fighting what everything that was happening. He was one of the people who dared to fight everything that was happening. So it's interesting, because when we think of Libra, we usually think of the idea of harmonizing and balance. And you see in his nature, you see a very combative nature, person who is fighting. And I think he was trying to bring a balance, like he was trying to provoke and to bring a balance that had been completely gone, of course, with the dictatorships. So I have some quotes from him. And so one is on the idea of balance and paradox, perhaps. He said, God is a counter clerk, so he gives in order to take, to get. So this idea that, you know, life is balanced. You cannot have both ways. I mean, he gives and he gets. And then a real love is like sleeping and being awake. You know, this like this kind of trying to keep both polarities at the same time all the time. He said lyrics is a complement of music. So the idea that you need both things to do music. And the one I like the most, the one on peace, he says, if we all take the idea together that freedom is not a fight, all the roles would be changed and many more barracks would be empty.
Oh, beautiful. So, oh, that's great. Yeah.
Freedom is not a fight. Yeah. It also reminds me a little bit of Gandhi, right? What you were saying before.
Of so much of what you said, even thinking about the giving and the getting. And, you know, Gandhi was very connected to the Bhagavad Gita, you know, which was about, you know, action without attachment, which for me is very Libran, but also is one of the deepest principles as karma, you know, in the philosophy, in Gandhi's philosophy, and of course, in the larger, you know, Indian philosophy. But the action reaction, you know, whatever you do will generate something else, and which will generate something else. And for me, that's quite Libran. And listening to the way that he described God, it feels very similar, you know, really of a kind. And a really, again, and attending to the way that things move, you know, the way that world of forces, the way the world of forces interacts.
It's like this game. How do you call it in English? This game that you play as a kid, that you go to one extreme of the
seesaw. We call it a seesaw. Yeah,
exactly. You know, if one goes up, the other one goes down. Mm-hmm. And this is very Libra. Okay, nice. So then we usually try to come up with some ideas on things we can do on this season, and we can choose serious things or funny things. Usually I come up with a little silly, funny things, but this time I came up with some more serious thoughts. I was thinking with this idea of Libra and the importance of relationships, importance of balance, the other concept that came to my mind is the idea of projection, how we see ourselves, how we discover who we are by paying attention to the people we meet and what they trigger in us, right? So I was thinking maybe it's a good thing to do during Libra season, to think about your projections, to look at the people that surround you and to try to see what you see in them, because maybe some things of what you see in them are part of who you are actually, and that's why you are joining them, right? And I also thought you could do this game, we could do this game, which is to ask close friends, people who you trust, to describe three of your best qualities and to see. It's a very interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever done it. It's very interesting to see what people describe of oneself, because the idea again of Libra, of the idea that I discover who I am through connecting to other people, right? So I was thinking about this idea and I thought, okay, if we ask our close friends to describe us and then to register, to be aware of how does this description feels, if we agree with it, if we don't agree, if it feels nice, if it feels uncomfortable, I think we can discover a lot about who we are.
Yeah, I agree. You're reminding me, there was an exercise, I think it was the Harvard Business School actually that created it, called the Reflected Best Self Exercise. And what you did was you asked you actually chose like 20 people in your life from different areas, like coworkers, family members, friends. And you said to them, please describe three moments where you saw me at my best, like concrete scenarios. And then tell me, you know, what about that was, you know, what was the active ingredient, you know, that you saw in me? And you would give this to people in leadership roles and have them do that. And then, you know, sort of work out, you know, how am I showing up in the world of others? And I think it's a very Libran exercise for sure. When you were speaking also, I was thinking about in the therapy land, you know, one of the biggest real shifts in that, and that's, I'm also a therapist. One of the biggest shifts in the field has been with Pluto and Libra people. I'm a Pluto and Libra person, where the model of analysis, where the therapist is kind of over here and the patient is over here, and it, you know, it's sort of held to be a vacuum. You know, it's all about this patient's psyche, and you know, there's been a huge move in relational psychoanalysis, interpersonal psychoanalysis, where it's really acknowledge that both people are fully in the room and are both pulling each other into, you know, the relational field. And it's this idea that the psyche is inherently relationalized, that it's not, you know, just about projection and transference, but it's actually, we delegate to each other, you know, aspects of self that we are not yet ready to hold. And then we reclaim them, but the therapist is doing it too. You know, it turned the, it really equalized the dyad so that the power is not concentrated. You know, the therapist is somehow independent of the relational field, but actually really insisting the whole encounter is relational, and both people are constructing each other. It's very Libran, and the Pluto and Libra group has brought that in, even with interpersonal neurobiology, where they speak about mirror neurons, you know, where you, if I were to bite a lemon right now, you would start to salivate. Even sometimes when you say it, the other person starts to salivate, you know, because we track each other, you know, it's been a remarkable shift in the, you know, it's like understanding that relationship is actually possibly more the point than the two fixed, so-called fixed entities doing the relating, you know, that it's actually the relating that is the flow of relations that is almost, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think that's a great exercise for people to do, because it reminds us of our relatedness, you know, which is in Libra season, it will be a good learning to do that.
And as astrologers, I mean, because maybe if you have therapists, you see people like in a for long terms, right? But as astrologers, we usually meet them once or twice. So it's also interesting because we can also reflect on the type of clients we attract, the types of problems they bring. And also it's interesting how, to me at least, how it changes based on my transits and progressions, how some themes start to come up in certain periods and some others go away. It's amazing.
It's really, I find that for sure. And again, it's like, you know, for me too, in a relational practice, even in the one session situation, you can feel how you are drawn into the myths of the other person. You know, you can feel how they assign you their Saturn, or they assign you their Venus, or, you know, and that actually becomes a thing that can be reflected on, not necessarily by saying so, but you feel it, you realize, oh, I'm being induced into this person's chart. And that is often for me the most poignant moment in the consultation, when I can feel myself in the chart, and then I can pull out of it a little bit and speak of it, not necessarily speak about how I was pulled in, but you know, it gives me something. You know, Libra draws attention, and that would be the question is, you know, how are you implicated in the world of others? You know, like it's a constant way of thinking about things. You know, what are you being induced into, and what are others inducing you into? You know, what roles are you in? You know, with each other.
Yes,
can be quite, you know, very rich. But it can also be a hall of mirrors, right? That's the Libra thing. You know, you get so preoccupied with how you are in the world of others that you lose that center, you know, that Aries, I am, you know, kind of is hard to find in Libra consciousness, because you're out there so much.
It's true. Yeah. Do you have any other things to do? Did you come up with any other things to do?
I mean, you know, I'm in Paris right now, which is not where I live. And so, of course, I'm visiting many museums, and that comes to mind, you know. Really, for me, art is so very much a Libran way.
Yes.
And beauty and aesthetics, you know, taking a little more attention to appearance and you know, not so much about, you know, trying to look a particular way, but seeing what feels beautiful to you, or even your, and the other would be the environment. You know, it's a great time for interior redecoration, or, you know, just finding, you know, even taking like a glass, you know, and saying, you know, where would I sit it on this table that feels the most pleasing aesthetically? You know, that's a perfect little Libra moment. You know, I just did that. I was like, hey, so, you know, this looks better here. And, you know, the French are, I think, quite attenuated to these details, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really, you know, that Rumi, I often think of, you know, with Libra, and I think about, you know, he has this one line, you know, who could bring me this cup of wine as you do so perfectly? Yeah, and that's the reaction you're supposed to have to a Rumi line like that.
I mean, but in some ways it's true. I think, I think it has been proved that if you are in a pleasant environment, your health, your psychic state will be enhanced, will be better. Yes, I think it's
so
important.
Libra is just so aware of that. You know, Libra energy is so attenuated, or to lighting, you know, like even experimenting with lighting, like, you know, closing shutters or dimming lights and playing with shadow. You know, all of those things are very Libran, you know, even seeing the shape around things rather than the shape of the thing, the negative space, the sculptors would say, right? Like, you know, or looking at trompe l'oeil, you know, at tricks of the eye, you know, like M.C. Escher or some of these artists who, you know, all of that can, you know, just shift consciousness into Libra.
Exactly.
So I don't know that it's so much about doing a thing, but if you want to feel Libra energy, I think those are ways to invoke the archetype. Yeah.
Great. So it's a great time to redecorate your house. Yes.
I think so. Yeah, right.
Yes. Nice. So now we go to the key signatures of the of the season. So we try to see important transits or important moments that we think that we might think something important is going on. So the first thing, of course, is the sun goes into Libra on the 23rd, 6:50 a.m. GMT time, according to my Raphael's ephemeris. And I don't know, I would say, first of all, this is a moment in which, I mean, it's an important moment. It's a moment because the sun goes back into cardinal sign, right? So there is a change in the air. That's something new that's starting. And it's the moment, it's like half of the year has passed, right? I mean, if we take the year as starting in March when the sun goes into Aries, it's like half of the year has passed. Like we were saying before, we come from the summer in which there was so much light if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, it's a different experience, but the Libra moment in some ways it's similar in the sense that you were coming from all the darkness, right? And suddenly the idea of that the light and the dark starts to be more balanced. We could take this, the idea that good and evil starts to be more balanced, or outer energy, inner energy, like anything you want to put in there. I do feel like in the Southern Hemisphere, there is a sense of maybe coming from Argentina, the entrance of the sun in Libra, I do feel that it's kind of a moment of justice, in the sense that the dark winter is going to be, you know, it's on trial now, and now it has finally lost, you know, like and the you know, the forces of good light are coming back, and we're going to have summer. But in the Northern Hemisphere, it's more like, okay, the summer is ending, and there's this sense of balance, this sense of, of equilibrium, because the day and the night are exactly the same when the sun goes into Libra. So finally, we have this sense of perhaps reassessment of everything that's been going on through the year. I also find it interesting because in the Southern Hemisphere, of course, the year, the scholarly year, starts in March. Mm-hmm. So it starts in Aries. So it's very meaningful that it starts in Aries. Mm-hmm. And here instead, it starts now with Libra. And I have this feeling that it starts in Libra because it's like, okay, we've had fun. Now it's time to rebalance that.
Yeah, well, you know, if we think about day and night, which were so important to the ancients in thinking about the sky and to all of us, right? It's the one thing in the sky that everybody tracks is whether it's day or night. Yeah. And even in a city where you can't see the stars, and you know, there are modes of consciousness. You know, the day world is about clarity and the crispness of distinctions and things getting done. And if you think of the day planets, it's the sun, it's Jupiter, it's Saturn, you know, they make things happen in the world. And then we're moving to night, to the dominance of night in the Northern Hemisphere. And so it's this moment of transition and a night consciousness. We can even just think about, you know, the way that things lose their distinctness, you know, and merge, you know, like the landscape all looks like one thing. You see the oneness, you see the relatedness. It's to me very Libran notion. And the other thing, when you were speaking, it just reminded me, you know, of Jung speaking about the difference between an event and an experience. You know, if you've had a summer of events, you know, all kinds of things, go, 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 daytime, 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 then you know, events become experiences when you have time for reflection and considering. Yes. And those are very Libran things, you know, to pause, to be, you know, kind of the way the scales pause, you know, for a moment, and then they usually go the other way. But the equinox for me is that pausing moment in the scales where, you know, there's something that you have a chance to sort of see what events are worthy of experiencing, you know, of dropping in at that different level. I always used to do a retreat, a solo retreat in the Colorado for like a month for years. And it was always in October that I did it, partly because the colors of fall leaves colors were very beautiful, beauty, you know, but also it felt like a time to do just what you're saying, you know, to calm oneself. I think it's kind of a natural thing that things start to slow down. We don't really do that nowadays. Everybody just keeps moving the whole time, and then they get very excited at the holidays and all this. But my sense is that the natural movement is to slow down. And so Libra for me is part of that, a different mode of consciousness in a way. And the Libra planets, and you know, they sort of seek that. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that, yeah, maybe we want to slow down when we come back from the holidays and we feel like we have to work. So,
yeah, like, you have to keep going. It's always go, go, go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the linear, you know, that's the difference between a linear worldview and a cyclical, you know, worldview. Because if it's linear, then it never stops. Progress, 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 and no, you know, cyclical way. So the equinoxes particularly remind me of that, of the inflection points, you know. Some people say that the person holding the scales in the sky was one of the Orai, you know, the goddesses of the seasons. And so there is that cyclical consciousness that's invited with Libra, I think. I like what I mean, some of these things were just coming in the moment, but I'm feeling invited by our conversation to that space, you know.
Yeah. Of course, yes. Nice. And so when the sun is going into Libra, something interesting is happening in the sky. We were kind of trying to see what we found. And one of the things we found is that a Mars in Libra also is going to be opposing Chiron in Aries. And this has been happening for a while now because if I tracked it, so it depends a little bit on the orbs that you use, but if you use the orbs I use, which is 8 degrees for the oppositions, you're gonna find that it started on the 13th of September. So it's been going on for a while, and it will actually be active until the 5th of October. And okay, we both found it's an interesting aspect. How would you see this?
Well, for me, Mars and Libra, Chiron and Aries, each on their own, are speak of difficulties with assertion or finding the right way. Right isn't even the right word, right? But finding ways that work for one to assert oneself. You know, Mars is this natural desire to do that, and yet in Libra is somewhat confounded, right? Is sort of so immediately aware of how it might affect the other person that it kind of undermines the ability to just say, this is what I want, you know, or this is what I'm about. And so a lot of times with Mars in Libra, you find it brings forward, when it's in Libra, it brings forward passive aggressive energy in the field and a difficulty with owning, this is what I want, you know, this is my position. And Chiron in Aries, of course, speaks to a wounding to that capacity as well. And so them being in a position, though, to me, is really, you know, opposition is maximum sight of one another, right? It's like a, you know, full moon is an opposition, and you can see the moon, they see each other, they look at each other very directly. And so I think it's a real chance to illuminate the patterns like that, and to really own one's own aggression, and you know, not just aggression, but also then vitality. There's a claiming of vitality that comes forward. You know, it's but I think it often happens by really those awkward encounters. You know, it's relation. You know, moments of conflict, and you know, it's a question of really not making conflict wrong, you know, actually considering that this is part of it, you know, like we need it to see each other in some way. And so for me, those are the kinds of things that are forward, you know, when with this opposition. Well, you know, for me, I'm having my Chiron return, right? And I'm in, it's my Chiron's in Aries. It'll happen five times, you know, and I'm on the second one. And I am in a process of trying to step forward a little more in different ways in my life. And it's quite difficult, actually. And there's a desire, as Chiron, you know, just wants to stay in the cave and tell people, you know, come and find me. I'm not, you know, I'm not going out there. And yet it wants to happen. You know, there's something that erupts and wants to come forward. I have these experience on my face. I keep getting these boils on my face, you know, they're rising. They're really big and inflamed. And it's like something wants to come out, you know, wants to be forward. And I think, you know, the symptom is a symbol for me. I mean, I wouldn't reduce it to that. It's more complex, but that is what speaks to me in the moment. You know, speaking of Chiron and Aries, it's like something wants to come forward. So I think there's a lot of passion, vitality, life force in this aspect. Yeah.
And I was thinking when you were talking about this, I was thinking, because Chiron in Aries has been there for a while now. So I think that we've been experiencing this sense of not being entitled to express our aggression, perhaps, or express not necessarily our aggression, but like fully express what we want, our desires, and this sense of not being able, not finding the again, proper or right is not the correct word, but not finding the way that feels right to express what we have to express, to defend what we feel we have to defend, right?
Yes, and protection. Yes.
Yes. And perhaps like a sense of frustration has been building up. So there's kind of like sometimes you go in the streets and you feel this sense of a hidden aggressiveness that's kind of building up inside. And then out of the blue, for a tiny little thing, people go crazy.
Yeah.
And I think with this Mars in Libra picking this up, I would say maybe these are a few weeks in which we feel a bit... we have this, we want to connect with this energy, this vitality, as you said, but we are struggling to find a way to do it.
Yes. And so I think that's where the opposition invites conscious reflection on it, you know, that invites sort of like what I might wonder about and during this kind of time is really considering where am I holding back, or where am I not, you know, acknowledging what I want, what I desire, you know, and how might I claim that in a way that, you know, it works, because it's so much life force, you know, when Martian or Aries energy is suppressed, you're losing so much life force, you know, in trying to please and trying to make it all work out. And like you said, then also having intermittently explosions and then back to that. So I appreciate the context you just offered of like, you know, Chiron and Aries has been going on for quite a while, but this Mars races through and trigger point, you know, but I think it's a trigger point, you know, for awareness potentially, you know, to see, and therefore, ultimately, the question, I think the thing it leads to is saying, you know, what do I really want? Which, again, it's a hard question for Libra, but very easy question for Mars.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting how sometimes we actually move through life and we're not aware of what we want.
Yeah.
Like I see it in I'm also a therapist, and I see it a lot when working with the clients, when you ask them, okay, but what is it that you really want? Well, if you could do anything you want, what would you do? And a lot of times people don't know.
Exactly. Oh, well, yeah. And or like you're doing a sex therapy with a couple, and almost always they don't really, like, they come in thinking something's wrong because, you know, I know what other people would want, or other marriages, they're having a lot of sex, or they're not, or they're, you know, but then you say, well, what do you want? And they go, well, I think I'm supposed to want this, or I'm supposed to want, people know a lot about what they're supposed to want.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. There's a tendency not to really be in touch with, like, what do I want in this situation, you know? So I like, you know, this is in a moment where that could be, again, there's an enlightening quality to the opposition, potentially, if you can hold the tension of opposites, if you can hold the complexity and the conflict, it has a chance to claim and see something that is otherwise really hard to see. And think that that's invited by this, but this is hard. I wouldn't, you know, soft pedal it. It's a hard one, I think, in some way, you know, because it's edgy.
It's very hard. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hard. And I think it's also, I was thinking now that the nodes changed recently. We were mentioning this before we started recording, that the nodes had recently changed to Libra Aries. So it's like we are starting a journey of thinking about this for a while, not just for these days. Yeah. And I think this also takes us to our next key point, because on the 29th of September, we have Venus squaring Uranus. And I'm thinking, because of this idea that you were saying of, okay, I know what I'm supposed to want, but what is it that I really want, right? And so Venus has been in Leo and she has been retrograding. So she touched Uranus on the 3rd of July. So the square, I mean, has happened has perfected on the 3rd of July, on the 9th of August. And now it's perfecting again on the 29th of September. So I'm saying these dates because, again, like you were saying about events and experiences, right? There might have been events happening around these days. And perhaps now it's going to be a time when the last hit, where we can kind of find what makes them, what brings them together, right? And find the experience. What is the experience bringing into? So Venus in Leo squaring Uranus, and I think it is speaking a little bit of what is it that I desire, right? What is it? Because Venus is in Leo, can I be proud of what I find attractive, of what I feel gives me pleasure, and how that may challenge Uranus in Taurus. So like how that may challenge what I'm supposed to be doing. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and you know, Uranus Venus is so often associated with unauthorized desires, you know, unauthorized attractions, unauthorized, you know, passions. And it encourages to, you know, to recognize those, to see them, to experience them, to grow through them. You know, it's for me, very potentially embodying of the heart. You know, if you think of Taurus and Leo, it's like, it's sort of letting yourself know what you want. And it reminds me of the Mary Oliver line, you know, let the soft animal of your body love what it loves, you know. There's heart opening with Uranus squaring Venus and Leo, like, especially when we think about Venus has had this journey, you know, and I guess she, you know, has her heliacal rise, or has had, you know, before this Libra season, but it's, you know, she's, been through something. And I almost think the Uranus, remaining Uranus squares to Venus in the sky, like it's heart opening, you know, it's sort of like letting something come forward that, that has not been forward, you know, and, you know, again, it almost always would feel, unauthorized, you know, because Uranus is like that. Yeah.
It's yeah.
Like yeah.
Unauthorized. And I would also say, because they're both in fixed signs. So I would say that Venus in Leo wants to trust that whatever she's feeling, she's going to keep it. And I think a square to Uranus brings this sense of uncertainty, this sense that this that I hold precious, which is Venus in Leo, and that I can actually find something very deep about who I am in this sense of that I'm finding, might not always be there. You know, I think Uranus in Taurus is kind of reminding us that even Taurus, which is the fixed sign of the earth sign, so it's like the most fixed you can get, even that can be shaken, right? So I think it's also, I love this image that you said of like opening your heart, and how hard it is for Venus in Leo to open the heart when the feeling might be that I don't know what I'm going to meet there. I don't know if something is going to be there to hold it, right? Because Uranus has this kind of, I have the image of Uranus like the sky. I don't know if something is going to hold my heart if I put it out there, or if it's going to fall into an emptiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm feeling the tenderness of that when you were speaking. You know, I can just feel my own heart, you know, the sort of tenderly longing for something, but yes, in the atmosphere of uncertainty that Uranus always brings.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it actually makes it very poignant to think about what would it be to keep the heart open amidst that, right?
Because that would allow, I mean, of course, we are intellectualizing and to experience it is different, but if we if we can do it, it would allow a level of creativity and perhaps a way of loving with Venus, I would say, a way of loving that has no previous model, right? That it's completely new. But how hard it is.
Well, that's beautiful. Yes, exactly. Right. I love the way you said that, because that feels very important, that in some sense, that's where this, I think, you know, there's a trajectory that direction, you know, of being able to do it in a way one has never, to love in a way one hasn't loved. You know, it's like the shifting of the relational template is possible, you know. And I, although it's intellectual, I have to say I'm feeling it as we speak. Like I can feel my heart's excitement at that notion, you know. And and in the moment, I feel like yes, I'll take the risk. But you know, who knows when the aspect hits? You know, hard to say. But in this moment, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, there's an electrical quality, and there, suppose, is Uranus, right? It's sort of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we try to put it in words. I also speak from my heart, right? So yeah. And it's interesting because even if I jump ahead a little bit, we're going to go back, but even if I jump ahead a little bit, we were saying that a little bit later, Venus will enter Virgo and will oppose Saturn, right? So on the 9th of October, Venus will enter Virgo and will oppose Saturn. So maybe there is this message of, okay, if you jump, I jump. I'm getting titanic. But I mean, there is this message. If you jump this Venus square Uranus, Venus will enter Virgo. Things will be able to be organized. And I mean, there will be something to sustain it. The idea of Virgo being an earth sign, there is a fertile ground from where to build. But because it's opposing Saturn, I don't know, it could mean that something might mature and might get, you know, a new way of loving might be able to mature and take shape. It could also be, of course, that there might be a sense of frustration, right? Like a sense of, the risk to take. I feel like the risk to take might imply a huge level of maturity, of personal maturity, with this idea of Venus in Virgo being self-contained in the way they love. Like a huge level of being very mature and very aware what it takes to love. Yeah.
It's really interesting while you're speaking. I find myself thinking about Psyche and Eros. And in the earlier part, when we were speaking of Venus in Leo and Uranus and the kind of the you know, Psyche and Eros and their passion and their love. And then thinking about, you were speaking of the mature, you know, the maturational demands of Virgo and the Saturn opposition and the labors that Psyche has to go through. They're very Virgo. And Greg Crawford once did a talk on Venus in Virgo and her, you know, the Psyche Eros story. It's reminding me of that as you're speaking, like, you know, that she has to do all these things, like, you know, separate all the grains and the ants come and help her. But what I think is so interesting, thinking about it with this aspect, is like in every case, she has these three labors, and, you know, we don't have the time to go into all of them, but all of them are kind of impossible to do. And so she kind of gives up each time, and then someone comes to the rescue, like the ants come and help her separate the grains. The eagle of Jupiter comes and advises her on how to collect wool from these vicious golden rams. So she's, and that makes me think of Pisces and Saturn and Pisces, and, you know, she has to keep giving up, you know, she has to keep, you know, feeling that I can't do it. I can't go on. And then, and then life comes to the rescue, and, you know, again, maybe that's a Pollyanna or, you know, overly optimistic way of thinking of this, but it is what I see in it as we speak. Like, you know, that there's a coming down from the Venus and Leo, the opening of the heart. There is a kind of coming down, but it's also another level of surrender. You know, it becomes possible and matures you. You know, Psyche and Eros begin with a kind of an undifferentiated love, and by the end of the tale, you know, Psyche has gone through a whole process, and you know, you could say that they meet in a place of greater consciousness when they are reunited, the two of them, and married, and Psyche's been forced to individuate. You know, like it all begins right when she shines a light on Eros and doesn't just want to stay in the unconsciousness of infatuation.
Yeah, exactly. But,
you know, right. So I sort of see that journey as we're speaking about it. It's
Wow, super nice. So on the same day, on the 29th of September, we had this minor grand trine going on, which is Pluto in Capricorn, trining Uranus in Taurus, and they are both sextiling Neptune in Pisces. So I think this is talking about this. I mean, I don't know how you take it. How would you take it before I start talking? Yeah, because I've talked too much.
Just the three.
The minor grand trine, yes.
Yeah. I think that one of the ways that I might think about it is the possibility of the earth signs, you know, kind of grounding the vision that the Neptune in Pisces holds.
Yes.
And then thinking of the Mercury coming in that really, you know, potentially helps to do that. Yeah. I mean, that's what comes to my mind, is a time to ground one's visions. And, you know, and I'm actually, I feel that as we speak of it. Yeah.
So because Mercury is going into Virgo, so it's going to be opposing Neptune. So it's going to create this kite. And I do feel, I have a similar feeling, like Pluto and Uranus are trying to change reality, because it's like one of the keywords, in order to bring this vision, like you were saying, with Neptune. And finally comes Mercury. So there might be a few days that are maybe it's a good time to think and reflect. I mean, and to think and reflect, and because it's Virgo, I would say to organize, you know, to take the first real steps into creating our visions, right?
And taking it in, you know, the story that comes to my mind in this moment is, you know, in the Odyssey, after, which for me is the ultimate Neptune teaching. I actually just did a thing for Astrology University on Neptune. But in the Odyssey, it's Neptune who keeps him wandering, you know, the sea for 10 years. Mm. And he's, you know, and then there's an encounter that they have in the underworld. They meet the blind prophet Tiresias. And he basically says to Odysseus, here's what's going to happen for the rest of the journey. And here's the thing you have to do when you get back from all these Neptune wanderings in the deep unconscious. I mean, he doesn't say the deep unconscious, but, you know, they've done all these deep, you know, meeting sorceresses and, you know, all this Neptune stuff you've been doing, all these big visions and experiences. And he says, what you have to do when you get back to Ithaca, you must take an oar from your ship. And you have to walk it all the way into a land where when people see it, they don't even know what an oar is. You know, they're so far in the land that mm-hmm. they think it's an agricultural implement. And he says, once you've reached a place like that, you have to plant that ore into the ground. And I've always felt that's just what you were describing of like, you know, you have this incredible Neptunian thing, but you must bring it to the world. You must bring it in and, you know, concretize it and share, you know, bring the sea to the land. It just comes into my mind when you speak of Mercury and Virgo, and it's like, and, you know, really going in there and doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And we get to the full moon, which is also on the 29th of September. So everything is happening on this day.
It's my solar return, by the way. This is helpful. Very helpful. It's
fantastic year. You have a fantastic year ahead. Yes. And so we have the sun and moon opposing each other, moon in Aries, sun in Libra at 6 degrees. So if you have anything at 6 degrees of cardinal signs, but I would emphasize more like Aries and Libra, it might be very important full moon. And I don't know, I'm looking at the chart of the full moon and I'm thinking a little bit of what we spoke before. So Mars is in Libra and he's the dispositor of the moon. So there's this desire with the moon in Aries, this need, I would say, to express ourselves. But with the sun in Libra, the goal is to be civilized and kind and nice and careful with each other. But then Venus is in Leo. So it's like, I am important. So I feel again, it's like this tension being played out between my own desires and the respect, kind of trying to respect who I am and what I want. And this idealized version, this ideal that we should keep harmony and balance. And yeah, how to navigate the paradox, I would say.
Yeah, no, I think it really, these Aries full moon or Libra Aries full moons, you know, they really do call the Aries Libra polarity out. And for me, the question with Aries Libra is almost always, you know, how do I be true to myself and related to others at the same time? And usually we treat that as if it's in conflict, you know, that I can either be true to myself or I can be connected to others. And I have to choose one. You know, Aries chooses true to self and Libra chooses connected. But really, in a sense, you can't be connected to others unless you are true to yourself, right? And you can't really know who you are unless you know who others are, because they're other than you. So I think it really highlights this thing of how can I be both, you know, related and connected to me, connected to self, connected to others. Yeah,
exactly. And I'm thinking the Jungian idea of individuation, that it happens in relationship. It cannot happen if you're isolated to the world. It only happens if you relate to other people. So yeah. On the 5th of October, we have Mercury going into Libra. So again, we're adding more and more Libra elements. And okay, we talked about this Venus going into Virgo, opposing Saturn. And on the 11th of October, we have Pluto stationing direct at 27 Capricorn. On the 2nd of May, it went retrograde. So on the 2nd of May, it got into Aquarius and then it went retrograde into Capricorn. And now it's going to station there and it's going to start moving direct again. So if you have anything at 27 Capricorn, or I would say 27 in any cardinal signs, it might be a triggering point. I mean, probably you're going through a long process of changes because it has been there for a while. And we were saying before recording, it might be a moment to kind of reflect a little bit on what's happening. And then we get to the new moon on the 14th of October, right? And we have a bunch of things in Libra. We have Mercury, of course, the moon and the sun at 21 degrees. And we have the South Node.
Right. So we're you know, this is a solar eclipse and a solar eclipse in Libra. So, you know, for me, those are so often, you know, moments of potentially really losing oneself for a little while. And then the question is often about, you know, how do I regain myself? It's almost like there's a, and maybe it's a necessary losing of self, you know, it's a necessary, like letting, you know, something releasing by doing that, and then, you know, coming back in a whole different way. You know, eclipses are, you know, such interesting moments, right? They're moments where if you're under them, they're a moment when night comes into day, you know, the sky literally, you know, the daytime sky reveals that it was always just a thin, you know, scrim overnight, and day opens up and a you know, night comes in. And so it's like we lose that ability to organize everything. And, you know, even the birds get crazy, you know, everybody kind of gets incoherent. And yet something is often allowed to be released. If it's at the south node, I think it's often something gets to be released in that way. And then, you know, come back together in a different way. And when with Libra, I think it tends to be in relationship context, you know, like there's something that comes to a head or, you know, becomes much more obvious or louder in some way, or new relationships, whatever it might be, you know, a lot can open up with that.
Yeah, very powerful. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling what you're saying. And I was thinking this... the eclipse is picking up the Chiron in Aries.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, damn right. You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like this theme is coming back over and over again.
Right. Yeah.
And perhaps the idea of accepting our vulnerability, like accepting how hard it is to be able to do both Aries and Libra. Mm. Right. Mm. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I love your idea of letting go of the idea of what relating to others should be with Libra. Then on the 20th, we have the Sun conjunct Mercury. I always like to, when Mercury goes Kazemi, because especially when Mercury is direct, this sense of a new cycle starting. So I'm jumping ahead. This could be a good day if you have to write, or if you have to reflect, if you want to start a journal. I don't know. Everything that has to do with Mercury could be a good day. And then on the 23rd, Sun goes into Scorpio. So we're going to have another podcast for that one. But I would wrap up this idea of the season with this sense of how to balance, how to respect my desires and respect others. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then we usually have a short section where we talk a little bit about good dates, fortunate dates. So I picked up on the 25th of September, Mercury is going to be trining Jupiter, both in Earth signs. So again, I think if you are planning to study something, if you want to publish something, if you want to, I don't know, everything that has to do with Jupiter and Mercury, it might be a good day because it's they're both in Earth signs. So there is this kind of realistic approach to your visions or whatever you want to communicate or to do. Then there is on the 5th of October, the moon in Cancer is going to be trining Saturn in Pisces and Mars in Libra. So it's like kind of a weird aspect because Mars is in Libra. But I don't know, I think it could be a good moment again to think about how to again with this idea of Mars in Libra, and in this case it's going to be touching Saturn in Pisces, so it's again this idea of maturing, grounding our drives, and with Moon in Cancer how we can nurture that. So maybe this is a good period also to reflect perhaps more in your inner world and how that your inner world, your inner emotions, your feelings, and how that may be having an impact on the relationship with others. And then from the 11th to the 13th of October, we have a grand trine on Earth. So basically, the Uranus-Pluto trine, which is happening between Taurus and Capricorn, is going to be picked up by the moon in Virgo. So again, I think there's this idea of grounding a vision. So if you want to do things, if you want to something that was going to have real, effective, measurable results, maybe it's a good day to think about that. Yeah. Yep. Or to just, like we were saying before, to organize what changes you want to do to achieve what you want to achieve, right?
There's a manifestation quality with Earth, you know, like making things real, bringing things into the world that comes to mind with that one for me.
And now we usually come up with a key takeaway or mantra. And mine would be balance is kept in motion. I act in order to harmonize. So this idea of, you know, being able to act in order to bring balance, but this kind of soft action. And I like the idea of balance in motion. If we look at nature, the way that nature keeps balance is by change. So I like this idea of bringing change in order to harmonize. I don't know, what could you come up with if you had to come up with like a mantra after everything we spoke about?
Yeah, I'm very taken still with having the heart remain open amid all of this. So the notion of the heart, you know, wide open to myself and others. So, you know, that's kind of where I find myself with. That sounds like a mantra, right?
Yeah, it sounds like a mantra. Keep your heart open. It could be a mantra.
Yeah, my heart is open.
Yes. My heart is open. Yes, nice. And then we usually always ask what you're reading, because usually people are reading something. And they're all curious to know.
It's interesting. I was thinking with all these retrogrades this summer and that have been going on, and even particularly the Venus retrograde, that I've been rereading, you know, so, which is not very often for me to reread, except for myth. I often do that. But so the things I've been rereading that are really forward for me, one is Bell Hooks' book called All About Love. I'm doing a retreat on astrology and love later. And so I've really been revisiting that. It's a beautiful book that really, the premise of the book to me is very, and to me this is very Libra, very Venus. The premise of this is that, you know, we are very shy just to talk about love, you know, like and one of the examples that she offers is just even something like, you know, why does a government build roads, you know, and it's usually defined in terms of commerce and, you know, industry and, you know, developing and all of that. But isn't it also for love? Isn't that why we do all these things? You know, love is behind everything we do in some sense. Yeah. And then it's a very practical book about love. And then in the astrology world, I've been rereading Geoffrey Cornelius's book about the moment of astrology, which is, you know, an incredible book and, you know, takes something to stay in it. But it so speaks to me of my experience of the symbols of astrology, of how they morph and shift according to the moment and of the encounter. Don't correspond always to the rules of the discipline. And I'm really grateful that book is in our, you know, shared collections.
Yeah. It's my favorite book.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
I think it's amazing. Now, I'm reading Star-Crossed by Claire Martin, which is actually about relationships. But to be honest, I cannot comment much because I've just started it. So I think she goes through the different axes of the zodiac and how relationships are established depending on which axis you're stepping into. And so, Jason, if somebody wants to reach you, or if you want to share, if you have any special events coming up.
The best way to reach me is my website is jasonhawley.net, or my email, which is jason@jasonhawley.net. A couple of things I'm doing. I'm going to be doing a reading group on the Odyssey, actually, where we will read, we'll meet for 8 weeks online together and read chapters of the Odyssey each week and share about it. And I do a lot of with experiential process. So we'll be making art, we'll be having conversations, reading different interpretations and kind of amplifying astrological archetypes, because there's so many you encounter. But it's a way to really get connected to the source. You know, in astrology, a lot of times people just have the Jungian interpretation of myth or the astrologer interpretation or rationalization of myth. And this is a way to get swim in the sea of the story itself. And it's an amazing tale. It's one of the few books I do reread all the time. And then I have ongoing experiential astrology courses online that people can find out about there, and retreats. We're doing a tour in Greece next year. There's a lot there. So, but that's the basic, notion. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. If you're interested in doing anything with Astrology University, on September the 30th, Gianni Di Poce is going to be doing a webinar on financial markets. It's called Can Financial Markets Overcome Jupiter Conjunct Uranus, which is happening in 2024. Good luck, everyone. And
then, good luck. Yeah, right, exactly.
In October, I really want to go to this one, actually. Yeah. And then in October 7th, 2023, Alexander von Schlieffen, I'm not sure how we pronounce his last name, he's going to be doing this webinar. I find it very interesting also. It's about the 12th and the first house. So it's called From the 12th to the First House, The Hidden and the Obvious. If you want to get in touch with me, you know, my Instagram is Liminal Cosmos. My email address is meetme@liminalcosmos. And then on the 14th of October, I'm going to be giving a talk, Astrology of Hope, at the Astrological Association of Great Britain. And on the, it's a conference of the Astrology Association of Great Britain. All right. Jason, thank you so much for connecting from Paris, the city of art and beauty. So fantastic. Very proper for Libra. It was a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. See you on the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Astrology University podcast. I'm the founder, Tony Howard. Head over to astrologyuniversity.com, where you can find webinars and courses to help deepen your study of astrology. Study with some of the best astrologers in the field and check out our diploma program for those of you interested in working professionally or in developing the skill to analyze charts for yourself, your friends, and family. Hope to see you in class soon. And until then, take good care.